Okay, we're going to begin a study in the book of Revelation today. Now before I get into this, I want to thank Barry for his teaching Romans. Now he stopped at Romans chapter 8, okay, and he'll pick that up after we talk about Revelation a little bit. Now Revelation, if we had a playbook here, Revelation would be divided into two acts, okay? Act 1 covers chapter 1 through 11. And then there's kind of a little pause there, and then 11 through 22 would be the second act. We're going to cover chapters 1 through 11 in this first part of this study. Then we're going to let Barry give us some more knowledge on the book of Romans. He gets excited about the book of Romans, so I can't hold him down too long. So, and then we'll go back and conclude our study in Revelation. So just so you'll know what's coming up in the future, good Lord willing. Okay? Yes.
Years ago, one of our elders.
Mm-hmm. That's because people are scared to death of the book of Revelation, and we'll talk about that here in just a second. We're scared to death of it, okay? Just in passing, and as a pat on the back, I want to get a little attaboy for Barry and Deidre. They came to us not too long ago, and they've just jumped right in here, and they've been doing a great job. Barry now serving as an elder, and I know Deidre is pardoning him on. We're so glad you guys came, and we just want to say thank you for all that you're doing so far. Okay, that being said, the book of Revelation, it's a very interesting book, but it's a book that's very intimidating. I've heard of, I got a little book from Reuben Shelley, The Lamb and His Enemies, and he was talking in his introductory material in there that a class of adult Bible studies that they determined they were going to study the New Testament all the way through. And they started in Matthew and went all the way down, and they got to Revelation. They said, well, you know, there's really nothing to be gained by studying the book of Revelation. So they just jumped back and started with Matthew again. Well, that's a shame. It really is. Because the book of Revelation is the only book that has the beatitude in it. Blessed are those who read and comprehend the words that are in this book. There's a blessing to studying the book of Revelation. But it's not an easy book. One of the reasons why is it's because it's written in what we call apocalyptic literature. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute, what that all means. I would encourage you, as you have time, to go back and read the book of Daniel in the Old Testament. Because really, Revelation and Daniel kind of go side by side because they're written in much the same literature. And the events that are recorded in Daniel are being partially fulfilled in the book of Revelation. And when I took this study in college, it was Daniel and Revelation. You studied them together. Okay. And I know down at West Houston, where DJ's sister used to attend, she gave me some class notes that they had on Daniel and Revelation, and it was a six-year study. Okay, so they did a pretty in-depth study there. We're not going to do that. Okay. But it is a great, great book. And one of the reasons why we are scared to death of the book of Revelation is because of all the bizarre interpretations that have been given to Daniel. Okay, and that basically has to do with the way that people interpret the book. See, there are different views of how the book should be interpreted, and we're not going to get into those different views, but I might just mention some of them. Some of those views are the futurist book. They think that everything in the book of Revelation is in the future. Okay, and that's where we get some of these bizarre interpretations. We've got like guys like Wolvert and Livesey who read about the fire and brimstone, and they say those are nuclear weapons, you know, that are going to be firing here in the future. And then we talk about the locusts that come up out of the pit a little bit later on. We'll see these things when we get there. And they say those are Cobra helicopters, you know, fighting out here in the world. Well, those are bizarre things, you know. Where do they get that from? You know, well, it's because they look at everything as being in the future, okay? And so if that being the case, it just throws the door open and you can make it say anything you want to say. We're going to get rid of all those things. And here, let me just say this. Wolvard, who was one of these premillennialists, he gave all these different interpretations, and he said all of these things are going to happen in 1989, okay? Now, what does the Scripture teach us the test of a prophet is? if it's fulfilled. Okay, well, it wasn't fulfilled. So I think we can just write Wolvert off, anything that he said. Now, I'm not saying don't read what he says. I'm just saying don't take it as being applicable. Okay, so those things did not transpire. Okay, so we got the futurist who transfer everything as future. We got the preterist who transfer, they translate it all as past. In other words, all this has happened. Nothing that is future. Okay, well, what do we do with the prophecies in the latter part of Revelation talking about the last days? Okay, there are prophecies in there. Okay, so we can't deal with those. Okay, and there's some other interpretations also in there. You get premillennialists, you got amillennialists, you got postmillennialists. Okay, all these different views, so they get very confusing, and that's what scares people to death. Okay. So I would encourage you to read the book of Daniel. Wouldn't take long to do that when you have time. And then make those comparisons with the book of Revelation. And we'll get into those things as we go along. Now, today we're just going to talk about some introductory material because there's some things we need to understand, because the way that we interpret what we get out of the Revelation is going to have to do with the way we approach the Revelation, how we look at it. So there's some keys to understanding the book. Okay, we'll talk about these. First one is the historical setting in which it was written. Okay, we'll talk about that in just a minute. And then the second thing is apocalyptic literature. What is apocalyptic literature? I can say that word, apocalyptic literature. Okay, we're going to talk about what that is and what it involves, okay, so that we can better understand what's in the book of Revelation. Okay, the very first words, chapter 1, says what? The revelation of John, okay? So that term literally comes from the Greek word apocalypse, where we get our word apocalyptic. And really, when we talk about apocalyptic, that's a term that modern-day man has kind of plugged in there. What do those words mean? What does it mean, apocalypse or a revelation? The same words, okay? Revelation and apocalypse. So an apocalypse is a revelation. What do those mean? Okay. A revealing, an uncovering. Something that was hidden being revealed. Okay, so that's what those things are. So right off the bat, what do we know the book of Revelation is? It's a revealing. Okay, here's how it works. God gave to Jesus, who gave to an angel, who gave to John, who gave to the seven churches of Asia, a revealing. Okay. Now, I want you to go to chapter 1. Let me find the verses. Read verse 3 for me. Verse 1. Read verse 1 and then verse 3. Who's got that? Revelation chapter 1. Read verse 1. Yeah. Okay, so what do we gain from those two verses? Verse 1 says...
Who was written to? Who wrote it?
Okay.
Who revealed it?
Okay, and then it says, what about time element?
Soon.
Soon, okay. We get to verse 3, what does it say? Things that must soon come to pass. Now, there's seven Beatitudes in Revelation, and this is the first one. What is a Beatitude, by the way? When we read the Beatitudes, what do they say? Blessed is he who... Okay, and so that's what a Beatitude is, a blessing. And so this is the first of seven blessings. Blessed is he who reads the words, okay, and understands them. So in these two verses, what we see here is we see a revelation that is going to happen when?
Soon.
Okay, keep that in mind. Okay, now go over to chapter... I had it right here, the last right at the end there. Chapter 22, very last chapter. Very last chapter. And then verse 10.
He said to me, these words are trustworthy and true. The Lord God, who inspired the prophets, sent his angel to show his servants the things that must soon take place.
Okay, I read 10.
Then he told me, do not seal up the words of the prophecy of this scroll, because the time is near.
Okay, so now what do we get from these two? These two verses. The time is near. Okay, now let's suppose, okay, that John's going to walk into this building and he's going to have the sealed books under his arm. He says, I'm going to give to you this revelation. Okay, now he says, now this contains a book about things that are going to, what did we read in chapter 1? Going to soon take place. Okay, all right, they're at hand. All right, and then a second time while he's there, he says this thing, saying, now he's leaving and he turns around and he says, now wait a minute now, remember now what I said, okay. This is going to take place soon. So we got it in chapter 1 and chapter 22. Four times, things are soon going to take place. When would you think then that the revelation is going to transpire? He's going to know these things that he's going to reveal.
Pretty soon.
Pretty soon. Okay, pretty soon. Okay, now we have to ask ourselves a question. What does that mean? What does pretty soon mean? You know, everybody always goes over to 1 Peter and says, you know, 1,000 years is a day, and a day is like 1,000 years to the Lord. Okay. Go over to Daniel chapter 8. Now you remember in Daniel, where Daniel, he's a captive in Babylon. And there he interpreted some dreams. I think over in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar had this dream about this statue. I forget all the head of gold and a chest of bronze. I forget what it was. But anyway, Daniel told him, says, now this is the interpretation. That head, that's you, Nebuchadnezzar. And then after you, there's going to come some other kingdoms. The next one is going to be the Medo-Persian Empire. And then following that, going to be the Grecian Empire with Alexander the Great. And then after that, it's going to become the Roman Empire. Okay? And he made the statement, in that time period, in that fourth time period, the Messiah is going to come. Jesus is going to be born. Okay? That was the interpretation. Now go over to chapter 8. Obviously, when we get to chapter 8, the Medo-Persian Empire is already ruling, because that happened during Daniel's lifetime. I didn't write down the passage there. Read down through there where Daniel's talking about it. And if you read all those, he's reiterating the Greek Empire, or the Medo-Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, and then the Roman Empire. Okay? Now, do you see in there, I should have wrote it down, where at the end he says, seal up this book. Anybody see that? It's down towards the end of the chapter. I should have wrote it down. It would save us a little bit of time. I just wrote down chapter 8.
Verse 26, but seal up.
That's it.
But seal up the vision, for it concerns the distant future.
Yeah. See, now Daniel is told, seal up the book. Okay, John was told, don't seal the book up. Okay, let's talk about this sealing of this book. Okay, what he was talking about these three empires that were following the Babylonian Empire. Okay, this stuff was written to Daniel in 550 B.C. Okay, that's when Daniel received these words from God. Okay, it took about 400 years for these things to take place, for the Roman Empire to come into being. Okay, and now Rome is ruling, Christ is born, and then these other things proceed. Okay, so Daniel was told, seal up that book, because it's for the future. It's not for this generation, it's for the future. Okay, that's a long time. So he said, seal it up. That was 400 years. Okay. John is told, don't seal it up, because the time isn't near. Okay. So how long are we talking about?
Less than 400 years.
If a long time is 400 years, okay. Now we say, you know, well, 1,000 years is a day, and a day is 1,000 years for God. Well, he gives us a key here. 400 years is a long time. Okay. So it's going to be less than 400 years. In fact, he says in there, the time is now. So that gives us a key to what the book of Revelation is all about. It doesn't pertain to, you know, 2,000 years. In fact, we have to ask ourselves a question. What benefit would it have been to write those letters to those Christians living in that day if those things weren't going to happen until, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 years later? What benefit would it have been to them? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So this gives us an idea about the time frame in which Revelation is going to pertain. So we look at this historical setting then. When it was written to, Revelation says, the seven churches, but we'll talk about that when we get there, because that number seven plays an important part. But who's ruling the world at this time?
Roman
Roman Empire. The Roman Empire has been ruling the world for over 200 years. Okay, the Romans had a policy, and they were really pretty good at it, that they pretty much let the people, allowed them to continue with their lifestyle the way they were when they were conquered. Okay, and there were, if a religion existed at that time, they allowed them to go ahead and practice their religion. Okay, well, now the Jews had been around for a long time, hadn't they? You know, they went way back. So they were allowed, Judaism was a recognized religion. Okay, what about Christianity? What? Well, it was, and it's going to become even more different, but the way the Romans looked at it, because where did the Christians come from? Out of Judaism. And so as far as the Roman idea was, well, they're just Jews, you know, and so they left them alone. Okay, but a long time passes, we're going to see something, well, it was always around, but it never was really used very much, a thing called emperor worship. Now, I don't know where they got this idea, but basically these people that ruled in Rome, it was that when they passed on, they became deity. And they were statues built, and it's not that people so much worshiped them as it is that they paid homage to them by burning incense and things like that. Okay, so, but it wasn't a big deal. There were several of them did it. We read about a guy named Caligula who tried to enforce it. He was going to put his statue in the temple. It didn't work out too good for him. It didn't happen. So, but he went back a second time and was going to try it again. And when he did, he died before he could do it. You know, so he was the only one that really tried to enforce that. But we're going to come along here I think it's like 96 when a guy by the name of Domitian ruled. Okay, now just trying to get us in line here with history. When the Jews were really rebelling and Romans were coming in and trying to calm them down. Okay, I think Vespasian was the ruler at that time. He was the emperor, and Vespasian. I might be pronouncing that wrong. But when he died, his son Titus took over. And what do we know about Titus and Jerusalem? Anybody associate them together? Titus was the emperor who went in and had a five-month siege of Jerusalem. And then after 5 months, finally the walls of Masada, who was supposed to be an impregnable fortress, it fell. Well, it really didn't fall. They killed themselves because they were starving to death because they didn't have any food. So he put an end. That's when Jerusalem, 70 A.D., that's when Jerusalem was destroyed. Okay? All right. So following Titus, his brother, Domitian, came on the scene. Okay? He started ruling about 96. And Domitian, good guy, wasn't he? He decided he didn't want to wait till he died to be deitized. So he said, we're going to do it right now. And so he passed a law and had his statues built, and everyone was required to pay homage to Domitian. Okay, now, get where we're going here. Now we've got Domitian saying, you will pay homage. We've got Christians who say, we don't honor anybody but God and Christ. Okay, now we got, boom. Okay, so guess what happens? Persecution. First of all, they took away the right to buy things. Okay, people had to have a kind of like our inoculation card. They had to have it with them, you know, before they could buy food. And if they hadn't paid their homage to Domitian, they couldn't buy food. They lost their jobs. Some of them were killed. Okay, they were being persecuted, and so. This is the time period in which we're talking about, because this book was written in 90 A.D., okay, and Domitian ruled up until about that time, okay, and so the church is under a lot of persecution at this time, and that's when John received his commission to write this book, okay? So what he's trying to do here is he's trying to encourage these Christians who couldn't buy food, Christians who couldn't earn a living, Christians who were being put to death, to remain faithful. Okay? Does that add up? Okay. So we're not talking about something 2,000 years in the past. We're talking about something that was happening right then. Okay. Well, with that in mind, what does that have to do with us today?
We live under persecution all the time.
The same thing applies. Same thing that applied to the early church applies to us today. Okay? And so the idea is just remain faithful. You know, I'm still in control. You know, just hang in there and everything's going to be all right. In fact, Paul is on the island of Patmos for what reason? John, it's okay to correct me. You know, John was on the island of Patmos for what reason? Why was he there? Yeah, he was in exile. He was being persecuted. They banned him over there because he was preaching the word. And John is close to 90 years old at this time, something like that. We don't really know how old he was. But he was an older man. And they had some mines over there that they were forcing exiled Christians and other prisoners to work in those mines. Now, we don't know if a 90-year-old man was being compelled. I can't conceive of that. But he was not allowed to have any association with his fellow Christians back in Ephesus. So it was a perfect time for John to write this book, because he says, on the Lord's day, when I was in the Spirit, this was revealed to me. And so we'll get to all those things here in a minute. Okay. So we got a time setting of when Christians are being persecuted. It was real hard on them. They needed some encouragement. And so that's the reason why this book of Revelation was written. Let's talk a little bit about apocalyptic literature. We've got our time frame now. I said we have to understand that in order to understand the book of Revelation. Let's talk a little bit about apocalyptic literature. If you're going to understand the book of Revelation, you have to understand apocalyptic literature. Okay. Apocalyptic literature is just full of symbols, okay, and full of animals and colors and numbers and all sorts of things, okay? And we need to understand those things before we can understand the book. Now, let me ask you a question. Looking at a political cartoon, and you saw a picture there of a donkey and an elephant. What comes to mind? Yeah, Democrats and Republicans. How do you know that? Because we associate Republicans with donkeys and Democrats with elephants. Did I get that right? I get those confused all the time, and I don't really care. Okay, because we associate them. If you see a picture of Uncle Sam, what do you think of? Yeah. USA, or a bald eagle, you think of USA. What about the Russian bear? Well, we think of Russia. Okay. Those are symbolic items. That's kind of like what apocalyptic literature is. Those Jews, it was very common, apocalyptic literature. Get my tongue tangled sometimes. It was very common to them, okay, because it started writing back in 200 B.C., and the last was written in about 200 A.D., you know, so we've got, 400-something years here of language, and normally this apocalyptic literature started being written during times of desperation and hard time, okay? They would start writing these things, and what they were for was to give the people encouragement, okay? Now, I don't know why they couldn't have just said what they said without all this language, but when they said it, the Jews that were reading this apocalyptic literature, those signs, and they would know what they were talking about, okay? We're not Jews. I don't guess we have any Jews here, do we? We don't understand apocalyptic literature. And so if we have somebody that comes along today and says, I can tell you everything about the book of Revelation, little lights ought to start going off and bells going ding, 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 ding. I'm telling you, nobody knows what all those symbols are today. All right, but we can know enough about them that we can understand what we're reading. Okay, so you don't have to know it all, is what I'm saying, in order to be able to read it. As we go through and start reading some of these things, I scratch my head sometimes and I say, what does that, what does that mean? All right, what are they talking about? And so it takes a little bit of understanding to know what those symbols mean in order to better understand it. Okay, we have a lot of apocalyptic literature out there. There's hundreds of books. A lot of times we refer to them as the Apocrypha. Okay, there were books like the Psalms of Solomon, First Enoch, There's one referred to over in Jude. Anybody remember what that one was? The Assumption of Moses. That he refers to a scene over there where Michael and the devil are fighting over the body of Moses. Okay, that comes from the Assumption of Moses, which is an apocalyptic book. Okay. Well, if those books were written back there and they're historical books, why aren't they in the canon of the Bible? How do we get our Bible? Where did it come from?
There were several different groups that decided which ones were going to be in the...
Yes, but how do we know that the ones we have belong in there? Okay, how was he involved in it? Inspiration. Okay. God inspired certain writers, and he basically gave them what to write. Okay. These apocalyptic books were not inspired writers. Okay. They're good historical books, if you can understand what they're saying, but they're not inspired by God. In fact, most of those writers wrote under an assumed name. What do we call those today? Ghostwriters? Pseudonymous? A pen name or whatever. So if it says the first Enoch, Enoch didn't write that thing, okay? It was somebody else. And so they don't fit the mold, is what I'm saying, to be inspired writings for this book. Now, it's a lot of history in them, a lot of good things we can learn by reading them, but we don't live by the things that are written in them. We live by the ones that are in here. So all of those books, if you can find an apocalyptic book, that's fine. Go ahead and read it and you know, gain what you can from it, but don't take it as being an inspired scripture. Okay. Now, the Old Testament has a lot of apocalyptic literature. We talked about Daniel. Okay, Daniel is apocalyptic. Zechariah is apocalyptic. Ezekiel, you ever read the story in Ezekiel about the chariot with the four wheels and the what do you call them thing? They had the horsemen, but these creatures had four creatures in there with full of eyes and everything, and this chariot was riding around everywhere, and it meant that was God's judgment seat was what it was, if you read that long enough. But that's apocalyptic literature. We even have a little bit of apocalyptic literature in the New Testament, and not that the book is apocalyptic. But when you read about, is it 1 Thessalonians? It talks about the second coming, with coming in fire, flaming fire. And, you know, that's apocalyptic literature. Okay, well, how are we to understand that? Does it mean that there's literally going to be fire, coming down? You know, well, if saying it's going to be harsh, okay? But so it's kind of apocalyptic in a way, okay? So when we read these things, we really need to take them to heart, because if it's fire, you know, that's a bad thing. It could be worse. Okay? So we need to remember. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about apocalyptic literature. The literature always appeared in times of hardship, extreme difficulty. It was written to encourage people. And basically, apocalyptic literature is what we call eschatological. I can't get these words down. Anybody know what that means? What's that word eschatology mean? Anybody know what that means? With end times. Okay. Eschatology deals with end times. Okay. And that's normally what it does, because these apocalyptic writings would take about, it's tough now, but look to the reward. Look to the reward. Because even if you lose your life during this time, this is what matters, not this. Okay, so that's what they were all about. That's exactly right. Okay, that's exactly right. Okay, all right, let's talk a little bit about some of the characteristics then of apocalyptic literature. Numbers are very, very important. Okay, but now there's a lot of numbers you're going to see in the book of Revelation, and then we can't take those as being literal numbers. The Jews would understand when they used these numbers, they might have meant something else. Okay, there's the number two. What about two do you think is important? What do you think about when you think of two?
Two by two.
Okay, two by two. Jesus sent the apostles out two. But why did he do that? Okay. Yeah. Partners, strength in numbers. Okay. One can be destroyed easily. Where there's two, there's a bond. Okay. So a lot of times when we come across the number two in the book of Revelation, it doesn't literally mean two. It just means, strength in numbers. Okay. So keep that in mind. Three comes up a lot. What do we think about when we think about three? The Trinity. So we're talking about God, Son, and Holy Spirit. Okay. So that's normal. We're talking about God when we see those things, okay? All right, four comes up. What do we think of when you think of four? Think of anything before?
Four quarters in a...
Okay, what about the earth?
Seasons.
Huh?
Winds.
Okay.
North,
south, east, and west, the seasons, okay. So normally when you see the number four, it applies to the earth, okay? So is this making sense now? See, the Jews would have known all that, Democrat, Republican, donkey and elephant. They would have known all these things. Okay, so four is an important number. We get to six, number six. Oh, boy, we got a good one on number six, don't we? Don't we have something in the book of Revelation that crops up? Yeah, 666, remember? Okay, it's incomplete. Six is normally the number of man. Okay, because we're just a little lower than God. It said, created us a little above the angel, but a little below God. Okay, so we're not gods. We're created, but we're not perfect. Okay, so, and 666, that's evil. That's the devil. Okay, so that's earthly thing. So when you see the number six, we're usually talking about man. Number seven, most common book, most common number in the book of Revelation, seven.
Creation.
What?
Creation,
7 days. Okay. Okay. Completeness. Okay. Perfection. Okay. In other words, when we get to the idea of seven, it's done. It's over. It's complete. Okay. So when you see seven, and it's going to crop up over and over again, we talk about the chapter 2, I believe it is, where you see the vision. When he saw the vision of Jesus, he was standing in amongst seven lampstands, okay, holding seven stars in his hand. Does that literally mean there were seven of them? Because he's going to say a little bit later, the seven lampstands represent the seven churches. Do you think that those seven churches in Asia were the only ones that needed encouragement? Do you think they're the only ones that received the book of Revelation? No, that seven was representative. It was for all the churches, okay. But when he uses that number, we would know that. If you were Jewish, you would know that. So it represents the idea of completion. Okay. What about 10? 10's going to show up. When I think of 10, I think of our numerical system. Okay.
10 millennia.
Huh?
10 millennia.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder how your mind works sometimes. Yeah, 10 little engines, okay. It's kind of our numerical system, 10, 20, 30, 40. Okay, we call that a
decimal.
A what?
Decimal.
Okay, decimal, decades, whatever. This is more of a human-type perfection. The 7 would be godly perfection, the 10 would be human perfection, okay? All right, one more. Number 12. Around the throne of God, there were 24, 12 thrones, and there were 24 seated on, 12 apostles, 12 tribes of Israel. Okay. What do you think that represents? What would that represent? Around the throne, there were 12 apostles and 12 tribes of Israel seated on thrones. Okay. So when that number 12 comes up, what do you think would be represented? Huh? Okay, organized religion. Okay, that's basically what it amounts to. You had 12 apostles from the New Testament. You got the 12 tribes of Israel from the Old Testament. That's God's organized religion, okay? So just those numbers, when you see those numbers, don't think 12 or 7 or 10. Remember what they stand for, okay? Because that'll help us to better understand what the book of Revelation is all about. Right. Now, not only those numbers, but multiples of those numbers, okay? Divisions of those numbers, like seven, we see 3.5, you're going to see that pop up. That's half of seven, okay? So that's an incomplete seven is what it amounts to, okay? We can just let our mind run wild here, can't we? We can come up with all kinds of things. But these people would understand these things, and they would know what he's talking about. And we'll get into this as we go. I just want you to understand these things before we get too far into this. Okay, colors. Colors play an important part in Revelation. Can you think of any colors from the book of Revelation? White. Yeah, white, definitely. What would white stand for? Purity. You know, God. Right in that passage where we were reading a while ago about Jesus standing among the churches, it gave him a description of him. He said his robes were white as snow, and he had long flowing hair. Okay? That was the epitome of purity. Okay? So white stands for purity. So when we come across this and we see white, okay, when we get to the four horsemen of the apocalypse, they call them, the first guy riding out was on a white horse. Okay, and that was believed to be Jesus. Okay, can you think of any colors? Any other colors? Well, that's part of it. Yeah, we've got gold and jasper and bronze and those. Well, I'm thinking about the predominant one. What about the second horse? What color was he? Red. Red. Now think about this. What would red stand for? Okay. What do we use it for today? Paint the fire hydrant red. You know, make the fire extinguisher red. Okay. What do we do that for? You know, you go out here and look, and you're going to see a red stripe parked up all the way around this building right out there. And Dickie's got written on there, says, fire zone. Don't park in here. Stay away from here. Okay. What does that mean? It's a warning. Okay. It stands for blood, for warning. It stands for bad things. Okay. So when you see the color red, you'll think of those type of things. What color is the old dragon? Red dragon. Okay. And that's applied to devil, okay? So red. All right. You see the color black. What would black stand for?
Opposite of white would be...
Okay, it would be the opposite of white. That's true. But it has a more meaning than just that. When you think of black, okay, yeah, what color do we usually wear to funerals? Okay, black, because that's a symbol of death, okay? Don't wear black to a wedding. Brides don't do that. That, you know, you'd get the, if you did that and you showed up, everybody'd be going, ah, you know. So that's what it's all about. You're supposed to be wearing white, you know, purity. Most of them ought to be wearing black, but, you know, that's not, you know, white. So that's what those stand for. The fourth horse also is said to be a pale horse. Now, when we think of pale, we usually think of a kind of a sickly colored green or something like that, you know. What would you think that would stand for? Any idea what that would stand for?
Sickness.
Okay. Sickness and disease and those types of things. So what I'm doing is I'm kind of laying all this stuff out for you. So when you come across these things in the book of Revelation, you see those... like you see the beast that comes up out of the sea, he's going to have 10 horns and he's going to be full of eyes. Okay, well, 10 horns, the horn stands for power. Okay, that's we'll get to that too. We'll talk about that. And if he's got 10 horns, what would that mean? He's real powerful. Okay, he's got a lot of power. Okay, so this is a strong beast that comes up out of here. It also says he's full of eyes. Okay, what do you think that would stand for? Yeah, you see it all, okay, everything. So you see the symbolism we're talking about here? So when we get to these things and we see all these things, let's not picture this giant monster thing. Let's just look at the symbolism. Full of eyes, able to see, 10 horns, powerful creature. That doesn't mean he's the powerful creature. It just means he's a powerful creature, okay? So that's the idea of the symbolism that we see in the book of Revelation. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. Let's just talk a little bit about the book. Revelation is the only book that has all three types of literature in it. It is a revelation, okay, because it's being revealed, something being revealed to us. It has prophecy in it, okay. What would the prophecy be? You know, we say Revelation's already been fulfilled, you know, but what prophecy is in there?
The second coming.
The second coming, the eschatology part of it that comes over at the end. Okay, so that has not been fulfilled, so there's prophecy in there. It also has what we call epistle in it. What is an epistle? Okay, it's something that's written. It's a letter type thing. Where do we find epistles? No, I'm talking about in the book of Revelation. Where do we find the epistles in the book of Revelation? Huh? Yeah, the letters to the seven churches. Seven letters to the seven churches. Oh, those are letters written to them. Now, what we want to think about, if this book was written in 90 A.D., okay, when was the church established? 33 A.D. Okay, so we've got about 60 years here, maybe less, you know, 60 years that have passed. Okay, what do you think the condition of the church is now, 57 years after Pentecost? When he writes these letters to the churches, what is he warning them about? Okay, some apostasies that have creeped in. In other words, evil has started invading the churches. Okay, and so he's writing to these churches to warn them, you know, you better straighten up. You know, you better change your ways. You better, you know, get back, he says to the church in Ephesus, get back to your first love. Okay, and so there's where we see the epistles in there. So we've got Revelation, we've got a prophecy, we've got epistles. Okay, so why then do we have the book of Revelation? What is it here for? What does it do for us? Why is it important for us to study it today? What was the purpose for which it was written? Who was it written to?
Well, it should comfort us just like it comforted.
Okay. The purpose. I wrote down what I feel here. The purpose of the book of Revelation is that God is still and always will be in control of His creation. Okay? Revelation deals with the church of our Lord and its struggles against the Roman Empire. Okay? All these historical events have been fulfilled, but the truths set forth are eternal and they speak to us today just like it did to them then. Okay? So that's why the book says, blessed are those who read the words of this prophecy, you know, and heed those things. It's been fulfilled. Okay? Rome is no longer in existence. And, you know, this is amazing. I was reading about this. We take Christ, and he came to this earth, okay? Insignificant. Romans didn't pay him that much attention. If it wasn't for the Jews, he'd have went unnoticed, okay? But he established a kingdom. And that kingdom is in existence today. We are part of that kingdom, okay? The Romans, as powerful as they were, ruling the world, okay, said to the church, you will bow down, you will pay homage to these emperors, you will burn incense to them, and they said no. Okay, these, no power, you know, they were unknown, okay, they were just Christians. Who's around today? Christians. Where's Rome today? It's gone. That's the book of Revelation in a nutshell. That's what it's all about.
Well, we can also take into account, we think that as a U.S. nation that we're powerful, but we're not as important as God's kingdom.
No. What's important?
We may fade away, but, I mean, the USA may fade away, but God's kingdom will always be there.
And so, he tells us, be faithful until, be faithful until death. That's what it's all about. And drink water. So that's the purpose of the book of Revelation. I'll get it out there in a minute. That's why it was written. That's why it was passed on to us. And that's why he said, blessed are you if you read and understand and do the words in this book. So we'll start with chapter 1 next week, God willing, if we're all here. We're going to read about how John received his commission and then how he wrote these letters to the seven churches. Remember that letter, that number 7. Okay, that's what's important. Okay, and we'll deal a little bit with it. Comments, questions? This is a lot of stuff to kind of comprehend, but if you'll keep these things in mind as we go through here, I think it'll be a lot more meaningful to you. Okay? Okay, appreciate your time.